Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. That's the telephone number for you to get in touch with us, or hashtag Giants Chat if you prefer to hang out with us on social media. We'll be moderating that throughout the show. I'm back, happy to be back. A little crippled, but I'm in the mix. If you hear the knock there, it's not a cast, but it's a little splint with the wrapping. Hopefully this will come off tomorrow. I'll see the doctor. But I'm A-okay. I was a little loopy last week on the pain meds, but otherwise, all is well. Surgery went well. Real quick here, Lance, will be joined in a couple minutes by Josh Vitale, Auburn beat reporter for the Opelika Auburn News. We'll be joined with him in a couple minutes. But a few things we could touch on at the start, and we'll get into these in more in detail as we go along. But the NFL owners meeting is happening, and there is some news going on as to potential competition committee rule changes that are kind of being pushed around inside the NFL that I'm sure is going to, you know, be part of the conversation over the next couple of weeks. And I think some of the ones are interesting, some I don't like, but I think it'll be something that once again, when all comes down to it, player safety is where a lot of these rules end up falling on.
Well, I think that's always the number one priority for the league, and this is the time of the year that they should be evaluating and seeing how they can improve the game. So I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I know that there's a couple of intriguing ones about perhaps on kickoffs, if you hit it through the uprights, you gain some extra field position.
You know what? I like that one.
Which I think is interesting.
And I think that rule, by the way, for you folks that haven't heard it, if you're kicking off and your kicker is able to kick the ball through the uprights, the touchback only puts the opposing team at the 20-yard line instead of the 25. Now, one blowback on that or one counterpoint to that, people think that the Broncos, for example, playing in Denver would have an unfair advantage because they're in, you know, thin air. But both teams would be in that thin air at the same time. So to me, I don't think that's an issue. It's the same factor now if you're an indoor kicker versus an outdoor kicker. It's part of home field advantage. It's how the league works. I think it, you know, gives more value to a kicker with big legs. And if you can, you know, the same way kickers were made more valuable by moving the extra point back, I think you do the same with this. I think it's a clever idea. Why not?
Well, and there is safety involved in it because obviously they're trying to take away the amount of returns in games and limit concussions and hits and so forth. So I think that's part of the rationale as well. But you're right. I think it does bring up the value of kickers, which I'm sure kickers at one point were frustrated because maybe their value had diminished as a result of the intrigue to return the football, and now it seems as if the rules are swinging it back in favor of the kickers because they don't want to give an opportunity for big returns anymore.
One of the rules that I don't like, and again, this is back to player safety, limiting the number of snaps you have, is making the overtime period 10 minutes instead of 15. No one wants ties.
Yeah.
And you've actually had a few more ties the last couple years than you've had because they've changed the rule. You get the two possessions if you only get the field goal. You know, all those new overtime rules, you have more consequences as you go further down the line, right? So, to me, ties are bad. 5 minutes of play is not going to be the difference between a player, you know, lasting 16 games in a season or not lasting 16 games in a season. To me, I think I would hope that's voted down and they keep the overtime period at 15.
Yeah, I also don't think that 5 minutes in the big picture of things is really going to speed up the game anymore
either.
I mean, listen, if you go into overtime, it's a pretty lengthy game.
And Lance, here's the thing. Length of game to me is inconsequential in overtime games because that's exciting. People don't mind if the game goes 3.5 hours. If the last half hour is an overtime period where it's a close game back and forth, that's exciting. It's the games that are 42-13 that go 3 hours and 20 minutes that people have problems with,
where there's a bunch of reviews and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, we like the overtime games when the Giants game starts at 4 and there's an overtime game going and they can't call the timeouts in the first quarter and the game moves along. So we're all for overtime games in the late 1 o'clock hour when Giants games start at 4. I'm just warning the league with respect to that.
Now, of course, we do make those timeouts up
we
later.
We do, but you know what? Yeah. It's nice to get the first quarter moving a little bit quicker.
Absolutely. So. And then the third rule I'll bring up before we have our guest on and we say goodbye to you folks on Twitter that got thrown around there. And I like this rule change myself because I think it's an unnatural reaction to a previous rule that was put in again for player safety when they protected the long snapper on field goals, where you can't line up over him because he's in a vulnerable position. His legs are spread out real wide to snap the ball. I like that rule. So now what teams are doing, in order to attack that immobile player that can't block, they're running that player up late to hurdle that long snapper and get to the field goal to try to block it. To me, that is not like a natural football play. That's almost taking advantage of a previous rule and finding a loophole. Now, those teams didn't do anything wrong. They were well within the rules. No argument there. But to me, if you take that out, you risk a player getting clipped on the legs, flipping over, maybe hurting themselves. You protect the center more. And to me, that's not part of the game in terms of a natural block of a field goal like you would normally have. So if they want to get rid of that, I got no problem with
it. Now, the corners and the safeties who actually have some leaping ability are going to argue that, well, why can't we take advantage of our athleticism? But I agree. That, to me, is countering a loophole with another loophole. That's essentially what that rule would do.
Yep.
So, to me, they could certainly eliminate that. And I don't think that it would change drastically the outcomes of games and strategic-wise as well.
No, absolutely not. All right, well, that's it on Twitter, folks. If you're joining us on social media, please go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. You can check out the rest of the show there. Thank you for joining us. And now we'll be joined by our first guest. And we're joined by Josh Vitale. He's the Auburn beat writer for the Opelika Auburn News. He joins us right now talking about some of the Auburn players coming out in the NFL draft. Josh, John Schmuck, Lance Middall, here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How you doing on this fine afternoon? All right, Josh, let's start here. Obviously, the big players coming out of the draft here for Auburn is Carl Lawson. He's a player that had a lot of injury history, and I think the wise place to start is there before we talk about him on the field. How concerned should NFL teams be about his injury history, which includes a torn ACL, hip issues, knees and hips scare the heck out of NFL teams. How concerned should they be about his injury history, Josh?
I don't know how concerned they should be, but they are because, you know, hearing what some of the pundits have, he's a guy who, talent-wise, could have been, you know, a top 15 to 20 pick if he had been healthy, but I'm being talked about as someone who, a guy who could creep into the end of the first round, but could also definitely be a second rounder, even though he was one of the better pass in the SEC last year. And, you know, that's what happens when he tears his ACL and his sophomore misses the whole season, back for his junior year, his hip, and his sophomore year injures his hip, misses 6-7. So it's definitely a concern, but I think the thing that helps him the most is that last year, one, he played the season with no injuries, and two, the best year of his career. So I think that helped him, you know, as he goes through the process.
Hey, Josh, I'm going to have my producer over here call you back up again. Your phone's kind of cutting in on us. We got that answer, but I'm going to make sure we're crystal clear the rest of the way. So Dave's going to give you a call right back. We'll get you right back up right here on Giants.com, and then Lance can pick up when we get you back. And let's give a little background on Carl Lawson, because that'll be our first couple questions for Josh real quick. We mentioned the torn ACL. He missed the entire 2014 season with that, Lance. Then he missed half of the 2015 season with a hip injury. But as Josh mentioned, he did play all his games last year and was extremely, extremely productive in that year. He had 13.5 tackles for loss, 9 sacks, first team all SEC. And this is the SEC he were talking about here. If you're a first team all SEC, that means you're pretty darn good.
I would agree, yeah. I mean, I think the tackles for the loss is what jumps out. It'll be interesting to see whether or not this was a flash or this is something that can come up moving forward. As we bring back our guest on the line right now, Josh Vitale, Auburn beat writer for the Opelika Auburn News, and we were talking about, obviously, some of the pass rushers, Josh, for Auburn, and Carl Lawson, you alluded to the fact that he's had a very productive final campaign here in 2016, and we just threw out his numbers, 13.5 tackles for loss, including 9 sacks. He was impressive in terms of getting to the quarterback this season, Josh. My question is, did you see enough in terms of the sample size that this is what's yet to come, or is this perhaps just a flash year from what you saw in 2016?
Well, it seems like he has the talent to be that kind of pass rusher, to be a guy who can get to the quarterback. The concerns I've seen with him is, you know, what he does elsewhere in his game, maybe stopping the run, dropping back in coverage if he's going to be kind of a 3-4 outside linebacker kind of guy. He wasn't asked to do that as much in Auburn's system because they didn't need to. He was a pure kind of, hey, rush the passer, don't do anything else. So I think the biggest knock on him is not whether he can get to the pass rush, the passer, because I think that's pretty clear now, but it's whether he can do the other stuff that makes him kind of a more well-rounded, you know, either defensive end or linebacker at the next level.
Well, where do you think he fits in best, Josh? As a 4-3 defensive end, or do you think he's better as one of those, you know, hybrid 3-4 guys that will put their hand down in passing situations but might have to, you know, stand up a little bit in early downs?
I think he does fit in a little better as kind of the hybrid 3-4 outside linebacker kind of guy, just because he doesn't have nearly the size as, you know, a Myles Garrett, who is, you know, more of a pure 4-3 kind of pass rushing defensive end. So he fits that 3-4 mold if he can, you know, add that thing to his game, you know, the run, the ability to stop the run, the ability to kind of drop back and coverage if they need him to.
Josh, the other defensive lineman of note for Auburn is Montrevious Adams, defensive tackle, certainly a big presence on the line. I've seen different projections. Some people think that he'll be a rotational defensive lineman. Others think maybe he has the potential to actually carve out a significant role. Where do you stand on what you think he can do moving forward?
He's kind of in the same, you know, Carl Lawson vein, as not because of injuries, because he's been healthy his whole career, but you know, he had his break. He had his best year of his career this year, and you know, the knock on him is that he hasn't always been as consistent as he could be. Because he's clearly talented, he showed that this year. He was, you know, dominant in Auburn's inside. He had a couple sacks. He blocked two kicks. He had a couple forced fumbles. I mean, he was everywhere in every big play. But you know, it's not clear whether that was, you know, what he can do all the time, or was that just a great year because he hasn't always been consistent. If he's consistent, he's playing like that, you know, full time, he can definitely, it seems to me, can carve out, you know, a role as a starting defensive tackle on a team, or at least a guy with a very heavy presence in the rotation. But it's going to kind of depend on, you know, what teams believe he can do going into the draft.
Is he one of those defensive tackles, Josh, that teams can maybe rely on to get a little pass pressure, or is he primarily more of a run stopper, in your opinion?
No, he's definitely was able to get some pass pressure last year. Carl Lawson obviously helped beating that dominant presence on the outside, but, I mean, Montrevious Adams was up the middle a lot. He had 4.5 sacks. I think he was second on the team in tackles for loss. So he had a very good year as a defensive tackle. He can rush the passer. He's not a guy who's going to stand in there and kind of, you know, clog up the run holes like a Vince Wilfork. He's not that big. He's probably more athletic than he is kind of a big presence. So I think he can rush the passer up the middle for sure.
Josh, there's a lot of depth on the defensive line in the draft this year, not just for Auburn. I mean, I'm talking overall. Where do you see perhaps Lawson and Adams winding up if you're a team that, you know, maybe you want to wait till the middle rounds to land the defensive lineman? Where do you see these two guys landing in terms of the draft?
I think Lawson could sneak into the first round. At Auburn's pro day, Mike Tomlin and Joey Porter from the Steelers were both there, both talked to him a lot. They seemed, you know, as interesting as you can to see a team being interested in the pro day. But it seems like if a team at the back end of the first round needs a pass rushing linebacker, and maybe a team's ahead of them have taken the top guys off the board, Lawson could jump in there. But I can't see him slipping out of, you know, like the top half of the second round. And Montrevious Adams is probably still a day two guy, second or third round. I don't think he would drop that far. But like you said, it is deep, so it really just depends on, you know, what teams like which defensive lineman, because they can go a lot of different ways when going for a tackle or end this year.
I have a couple follow-ups on Lawson specifically, Josh. Josh Vitale covers Auburn, joining us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. I thought he had an interesting tweet just under 24 hours ago. This is the tweet he sent out. Knowing how to rush the passer is just as important as having the physical tools to do it. The elite have both. I will be elite. Now, after his combine performance, he did a pretty good job out there. I don't think anybody doubts Carl Lawson's physical ability. I guess my question for you is, given his limited amount of experience on the field, you know, he missed all of 14, he missed half of 15, how put together and advanced is he as a pass rusher in terms of having multiple moves, counter moves, or is he a guy right now that's really just getting away with being able to bend the edge and using his quickness to get around the offensive tackles, or does he have a more complete game getting to the quarterback?
He does seem to have a pretty complete game getting to the quarterback. I don't know how many, you know, moves per se he has, but I mean, it wasn't just a pure speed rush or a pure bull. Right? He got to the quarterback pretty well. He made moves on tackles. He had a lot of, you know, pretty impressive sacks. I don't think that's the issue with him. I think teams know he can get to the passer. It's the other stuff. You can't, at his size, he's only 6'2". He's not that big as far as defensive ends go. I don't think at that size you can just be a guy who say, hey, I'm going to rush the passer and do nothing else. I don't think you can do that in the NFL anymore. So I think it's the rest of the stuff. that knocks him more than that, the time on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And in 6'2", you would like to have a little bit longer arms than 31.5. I think for a defensive end, that's probably a little shorter than most teams would like. And that comes down to setting the edge. You mentioned the other stuff. We talked briefly about him as a stand-up guy having to cover. How is he at setting the edge? Can he, you know, not let these big offensive tackles or pulling guards knock him around? Can he stand his ground on the defensive line against the run?
That was the biggest knock on here. You know, I read a lot of the Pro Football Focus kind of stuff on him, and it's, I mean, when teams passed, he was, you know, as far as passers go, he was elite. He was in the backfield. He was doing that stuff. It was when the team kind of ran to his side where he was not maybe as good as setting the edge. And he made tackles. He made plays in the run game, but that's not his strong suit. His strong suit was getting to the quarterback. So I think, you know, he has the ability to, but it's going to take a lot more, you know, getting the technique down because, he's not that big as far as defensive ends go. So he's going to have to learn that stuff, or he's going to have to kind of, you know, convert to being a 3-4 outside linebacker guy who can play at, you know, 6'2 at that position is, you know, much bigger than 6'2 at defensive end.
Sticking in the trenches, Josh, I mean, I know there's not a great deal of other players of note with respect to this Auburn class, but Robert Leff, the offensive lineman, similar to me with respect to Lawson, the fact that he was hurt early in his career, he's been moved around in various different positions. It seems as if he's played a little bit of left tackle, he's been a blocking tight end, then he wound up at right tackle. You know, what is his position of strength after you've seen him over the last few years? And, you know, once again, if you're a team that's looking for an offensive lineman in the middle rounds, is he somebody that could provide some decent depth in the NFL?
I think he can be. I think you're right. He got bounced around a lot early in his career, but this year he was a starting right tackle all season. Didn't miss a game, no injuries, anything like that. And he played very well. I know he graded out very well. Auburn's offense running to the right side with him and Braden Smith was, you know, one of the best in the SEC. They finished sixth in the country in rushing. He played very well. You know, obviously the lack of, playing time throughout his career will keep him from being, you know, a high or even mid-round draft pick. But I think if you're looking for depth, you know, at the tackle or guard spot, you know, fifth, sixth round, I think you could do a lot worse than Robert Leff down there.
Yeah, I want to stick on the offensive side of the ball. Another guy coming out is Tony Stevens. You know, he was a top 100 recruit for you guys. All the physical traits you would want as a wide receiver. Obviously, things didn't go his way and work out for him at Auburn. Is he one of those guys where a team will say, you know, maybe we can figure out a way to coach this guy into being a player because of his physical ability? Or is he to the point now where he's been given enough chances where a team's going to be like, well, you know what, maybe he might be a great athlete, but he's just not a very good football player?
Yeah, it's a fine line with him because he didn't do really anything his first 3 years at Auburn, even though he's got the size. He's 6'2". He can run very well. Didn't do much first 3 years. And last year, first, you know, three or four games, or more, five or six games, he had about 300 yards. He led the team in receiving pretty much every game. He had a couple of touchdowns, was playing great. And then, you know, the last six, seven games just kind of disappeared, only had a couple more catches, dealt with injury, really kind of fell off. So it's that, you know, he has the talent. He definitely has the physical abilities, like you said. So we'll take a team kind of saying, hey, we'll take a shot on this guy. Maybe we can coach him. Or it's going to be, yeah, he had 4 years to use those abilities at Auburn and didn't. So, you know, maybe he doesn't have it. But I think a team will give him a shot. I'm not sure if he gets drafted, but he'll be in a camp, in a few months for sure, I think.
Talking with Josh Vitale, who covers Auburn football team for the Opelika Auburn News. Following up on the wide receiver, Josh, you mentioned his height. Is he mainly a red zone target, though, or is there more to him in terms of his finesse and his route running that even if you did take a chance on him, you're not just bringing in a guy where maybe you're going to call him out to do jump balls and try to catch balls in the end zone, that there's more to perhaps his game?
I think there is more. Because Auburn didn't use him as much of a red zone threat. It's hard to tell with receivers, especially in last year's Auburn team, because with all the injuries and all that, I think Auburn only passed about 30% of its plays. So there really wasn't a lot of, you know, throwing the ball around and really taking advantage of receivers. He can jump. He has that kind of ability. But he also, you know, he made a few plays over the middle. He made a few plays, you know, down the sidelines, kind of out routes. So he has the ability to run all the routes. With him, it's just kind of consistency and can he do on a consistent basis and actually help a team instead of just being, you know, an athlete who you're not sure what you're going to get from him play in, play out.
And then, Rudy, finally on the defensive side of the board, Rudy Ford, a safety. Sounds from what I've read about and what I've seen from him watching a couple of the Auburn games I watched before we had the spot with you. A bit of a run stopper, more of a box safety, a guy that can tackle and go downhill a little bit.
Yeah, that was his game at Auburn. He started out at corner. Well, he actually was a running back when he got to Auburn. Played some corner, played some safety, eventually settled in at nickel and led the team in tackles two straight seasons. So wow. He's definitely got talent there, but he's not the biggest guy. But he can make tackles in the box, and he can run. He's probably one of the fastest guys Auburn had on the team last year. He's a guy, and Josh Holsey as well, the cornerback. I think both those guys are going to get kind of pushed down draft boards because, you know, they're not really, you know, physically that great, or they don't have the numbers that say they should be top corners or things like that. But I think both those guys can definitely provide depth in the secondary if you can snag them with a late round pick.
And Josh, final question: you're in the SEC, you watch all these SEC teams coming in and out against Auburn, and I like to ask reporters and guys who cover teams if anybody really jumped out to you from an opponent standpoint during the year where you saw him in that game against Auburn, you're like, boy, if this guy is not an absolute star in the NFL level, I'd be shocked. Do you have one of those guys that really jumped out to you? Obviously, haven't seen LSU, haven't seen Alabama, and all those other great teams in the SEC.
That's a very good question. I would love to say Miles Garrett, but he was kind of hurt when he played Auburn, so I wanted to see it from him, but I didn't that game because he was kind of dealing with an ankle at that point. Fournette was hurt too when I saw him. I think this year, Reuben Foster at Alabama was obviously, you know, as advertised. He seems like a very mean dude in the middle as a linebacker. Hits really hard, lit up a few Auburn players. And then not as high of a draft pick kind of guy, but Chad Kelly at Ole Miss was unbelievable in the game they played Auburn. Auburn going into that game hadn't allowed a quarterback to top, I think, 280 yards passing. He threw for 430.
Wow.
He's not a high round pick, but I think he should end up on a team somewhere. I think he can be a guy who will compete to be at least a very good backup in the league at some point.
Josh, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up with you next year as we get closer to the draft. All right.
Thanks a lot, Josh.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
That's great, Josh Vitale. Opelika Auburn News joins us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, giving us the down low on some of the Auburn prospects heading in to the 2017 NFL Draft. And I agree with him, I think, on both counts. I think Montrevious Adams is I'd probably say a third-round guy. I'm not sure if he'll sneak into the second, maybe. I think he's likely a third-round guy, and I think he hit it on Lawson, where he's going to be one of those guys. And here's the thing, I think. There's so many pass rushers in this draft, Lance, that – you know, can bend the edge, 3-4, 4-3. I think from picks 20 to 40 or 50, you have a bunch, maybe half a dozen of those guys, and teams are going to have to decide based on how they play which guy fits their system. And I think that's going to go a long way to determining which teams draft which guys. Do they fit what that team runs and the type of players that they want, because there's just so many of them. You can pick and choose. It's not like last year when literally after the first two picks of the second round, the edge rushers were gone. Emmanuel Ogba went off the board on, I can't remember the name of the other kid that went either first or second in the second round last year, but they were gone and there was no one left. There were enough guys, Lance, where there's going to be a nice selection in round two of edge rushers if you want one.
Well, I remember 2 years ago, remember it was the year of the tweeners, and teams were deciding whether or not some of those linebackers / defensive ends, depending on whether you run a 3-4 or 4-3, would fit and translate to the NFL. That was the big narrative 2 years ago. Last year was a little bit more definitive, as you alluded to. This year, I think we're back to somewhat of the tweener stage.
Kevin Dodd, by the way, was the other
Dodd
guy.
Dodd was the player,
thank you.
Okay, that you were referring to. And the reason why I bring up the tweener narrative again is it's interesting because the two players that we just talked to Josh about, NFL.com made comparisons to two giants.
I
don't know if you
that.
Noticed that.
I did.
I'm not bringing them up to say,
well,
you know.
I was going to ask, but I figured he would have known anything about the other
known,
two guys.
Correct.
Right.
And
yeah.
That's why I didn't bring it up, because he didn't cover Syracuse.
Right.
And he didn't cover the Pac-12. So you throw out a name like Jay Bromley and double O, I don't know if that would have rung any bells. But
and Bromley was the compare for Adams, obviously, and double O for Lawson.
For the defensive end. Now, remember, that's NFL.com, and I think NFL.com does a really nice job in terms of their analysis and some of their comparisons. But remember, that's only the opinion of the one individual who is certainly looking at it through that lens. But
lens zero line in this case.
So he was the individual that made the evaluations for the Auburn players, and it was interesting that he did bring up two Giants defensive linemen that are currently on the team. And that's why when I looked at that, I figured I was kind of surprised when he threw out that he thinks Lawson could sneak into the latter stage of the first round based on if you're making a comparison to a player like Double O, who, remember, also had an injury history in college and there were some question marks. I would have thought maybe Lawson can fall a little and then maybe he could get good value
in the
second round or maybe the third round.
Did Double O miss a lot of games with injury in his final year in college? Or like Lawson, did they come more earlier in his career?
That's a good question.
I'm trying to remember. Because like he said the big difference with Lawson and why teams might be more willing to roll the dice on him.
Because he came on most recently.
Because he didn't miss any games as a senior. Yeah. He was healthy as a senior. So I don't remember if Double O missed much time as a senior. I don't think he did. I think he actually came back. He didn't have great numbers. But I do believe he came back and played his senior year, but maybe he missed his last few games.
I think he did. I think you're right. I think it's similar to Lawson.
I think he played around eight games his final year, but then he missed the final few games of the year. Because remember, I don't think he had hip surgery his final year.
2012, and then 13 he missed completely, so he wound up playing 13 games in 14.
So he basically missed two straight years, and then he played 13 games in 2014. All right, so you know,
that was his most productive year, especially getting to the quarterback.
Not
too
completely dissimilar than to Lawson, who missed his whole sophomore year, missed half his junior year, and then played his full senior season.
And that
not much different.
And that may be one of the reasons why Zierlin chose him, because of more of the injury history
and
the amount of time that they missed.
And they both have hips.
Correct. And they both came on in their final year. So maybe, I'm just curious if his rationale, because here's the thing, when they throw out the comparisons about these NFL players, they don't give you why 100%, but he may have been thinking more of just the path that Double O took to get to the NFL, as opposed to maybe their styles as players.
And Odighizu a little bigger. He's 6'3", 270. Lawson 6'2", like 260. And I think Odighizu has got long arms. I got to imagine he has much longer arms than Lawson. So I thought that was interesting. And then the Bromley Montrevious Adams thing, similar. When Bromley came out, what was his big thing at Syracuse? He was able to get to the quarterback. I think he was second or third in the nation in combined the tackles for loss and sacks when he came out. I think he had 10.5 sacks and some like 15 tackles for loss or something. And, you know, Adams had some of those numbers last year too. So I see the comparisons. I think they make sense.
Yeah, Bromley, 13.5 tackles for loss in 13. So that's what he was certainly known for. And he also, you know, showed that he had the ability to get to the quarterback because he had 9 sacks.
And 9 sacks, yeah, that was close.
So those numbers jumped down, and Adams has flashed a little. Mm-hmm. But remember, with Adams, he brought up, Josh, consistency. That's what you have to figure out. I mean, are you going to get what the effort he brought in week one? Are you going to get that in week two? Is it going to come back in week four? And listen, you can say that about a lot of young players. So I don't think that that's necessarily unique, but that was one of the things that to me jumped out when he was evaluating Adams.
And you always wonder about motor for these bigger guys, and especially guys that are inconsistent. Anyway, you've got some guys on hold. Let's get to you. 201-939-4513. Matt and Muncy will lead us off first right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Matt, how are you? Matt, you there?
Oh, Matt's a man of very few words, apparently, today.
Matt has been impersonated by Mr. Dial Tone. Let's go to James in Long Island. He's up next. Hi, James. How are you?
Hey, guys.
Hey, James.
I just want to speak a little bit about Eric Flowers, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
As well as Jarrell Adams.
Absolutely.
I've been a big advocate of Eric Flowers from day one. And I look at the history of the draft. And the last 4, 5, 6 years, a lot of these guys that come out where they claim that they're dancing bears, that they're almost like foolproof, you can't go wrong with a left tackle. Eric Fisher, one of them. You know, Greg Robinson, another one. Luke Jokel. If you look at the draft the last 5 years, these guys who were supposed to be bona fide studs at the left tackle position, they've all had a tendency to move to either guard or the other side, right tackle. So the way I look at it, I believe the left tackle position has almost become like a quarterback position in the first round. It's almost like it's hit or miss.
Yeah, and James, it's funny. I think Peter King had these numbers in his Monday morning quarterback about a month ago where people talk about how tough it is to find a quarterback. The success rate of drafting quarterbacks in the first round was actually higher than the success rate of drafting offensive tackles. So I think you're right. Now, there are some guys that stick, like Terrell Lewan. That worked out. Jack Conklin.
Yes.
That worked
yes.
out. Now, but you're right. 100%. There are more guys that don't. You're absolutely right about that. And it's funny, we were talking before the show, and I forgot. I was going to ask him about Greg Robinson, who went to Auburn, our guest, to kind of get a feel for maybe why he didn't, you know, work out in the pros and, you know, things like that. But look, James, you're right. And I said this a lot at the combine, and I asked people about it. And to me, as you get further along here with the way college is with their offensive systems, offensive yes. line is going to become a premium position. The same way corner is and quarterback is and wide receiver is and pass rusher is. Offensive linemen, especially offensive tackles, are going to be a premium position on the same level of those because they simply do not come along very often where guys are ready to go. And even the tackles that worked out, like Matthews in Atlanta, Lance, he had a lot of mm-hmm. trouble his first year in the NFL.
He
was much better in his second year. So yes. it takes some time for these guys now with the way the college system is implemented offensively.
And I just want to, if I can say one more thing to the Giant fans out there, I've been watching Eric Flowers closely the last two seasons, and what's frustrating about him, that his run blocking, I don't know what the grades are for a Pro Football Focus, but when you watch him in the run game, there always seems to be the Giant running back, when they run behind Eric, they're getting 4, 5, 6 yards at a pop. Nobody ever discusses how well he's doing in the run game, and what's frustrating about him is the fact to me, I don't know what the story is, so let me give you a quick little story. My nephew moved to Atlantic City when he was 21 years old to become a professional poker player.
Okay.
So I have an argument with him all the time when we discuss the Giants. I'm trying to explain to him, if I'm right, I don't know, but we have a little side bet. And if I can get the answer off the air, I don't know if you guys have the answer or not. I'm trying to tell him, I believe it's so much easier to pass block than it is to run block, and the fact that Eric is having a hard time with his two-hand shiver and he's grabbing so much, that's what's frustrating to me. It almost seems like it's a mental block that he can't get his hands in front of him. We all know the guy's strong as an ox. He graded out the strongest guy in the draft, so we know he has the tools. And what I would like to see personally, if he came back at 310 as opposed to 325, 330, maybe that would help out his pass and block a little bit. But what's frustrating about it, the only thing that frustrates me is the fact that he can't use that shiver, because that two-hand shiver seems to be, you know, something that you learn in football at a very, very early age.
Well, James, I think me and Lance are in agreement on this, and I'll be real quick and I'll let Lance answer. I'm going to have to agree with your brother on this one. To me, coming out of college and going to the pros, it's a lot tougher as an offensive tackle to pass block. Your natural movement as an offensive lineman is to go forward, to be strong, to physically overwhelm your opponent. It's when you have to have balance, foot quickness, and, you know, things like that. Technique is so much more important in pass blocking than run blocking, and it's a lot harder, Lance, to master.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you look at Eric Flowers, like most rookies, you know, it's the technique that has to be refined in their first few years. So, I mean, I would agree with the sentiment that I think it's much more challenging to come in year one and be as good of a pass protector as opposed to a run blocker. Plus, you know, you mentioned, James, about him maybe losing weight, but, you know, I think if that's Eric Flowers' strength, which I think that has been documented to a certain degree, you don't want him to lose some of his frame and his structure that actually helps him be effective in blocking up front for the run.
Fair enough. And one more question. I'll take the answer off the air. I watched Darrell Adams pretty solidly last year, and if you watch every time, I don't think he dropped the ball all season, for one thing, okay? Never dropped the ball, and when he did catch the ball, the guy ran with some tenacity. So I think, for whatever reason, I don't know if they're still developing him, his times are very good, he's a very fast guy. I think, tell me what you guys think, I think we can get some more out of Darrell Adams coming into 2017. I'll take your thoughts off the air. I appreciate the time today. You guys do a wonderful job.
Thanks, right, James. Yeah, I think you'll get more out of Jarrell Adams.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sample size is so small for Jarrell Adams right now. I mean, I don't think anybody's thrown him to the wayside and say, oh, my God, I didn't see enough as a rookie. Very small sample size. Flashed a bit at times as a receiver. You know, they need to see another full season. He has opportunities to develop more as a blocker. But I think Adams showed enough that you feel good if you're the Giants that you have another young tight end in the mix. And with Rhett Ellison, who could be considered more of the blocking type of guy, maybe you can run more two tight end sets, and then Adams can continue to flourish as a receiver.
That's the question, though. Is Ellison's presence as a blocker going to take away maybe some chances for Adams to be on the field as a blocker and then also in play action, go out in routes and things like that? You wonder if Ellison's addition might hurt his PT a little bit.
Well, I think it all depends on what type of formations they run. I mean, that's the million-dollar question. Are they going to run a lot of two tight end sets? If they do, my answer would be I don't think it's going to hurt Adams.
Or if they theoretically use Ellison as the fullback and have Adams play tight end.
Then that also won't hurt him because Ellison will be more behind the line of scrimmage. One other thing that I wanted to mention with respect to Ereck Flowers, John Mara spoke at the owners' meeting, and he was asked about some of the free agents as well as Ereck Flowers. And this is up on Giants.com. This was just his thoughts on Ereck Flowers when he spoke with the media at the owners' meeting. You can read more on Giants.com, but I just want to read the quote. Quote, I think he's a very prideful guy. I think he was probably stung by some of the criticism. I think that will serve to motivate him next year. He's a good kid. He really is. He wants to be a top player in this league. I think when you have a guy that's going to work as hard as he does and is as big and strong as he is, I think you have a chance. End quote.
Well, he's got a chance. And look, you're not, and this is what Ben McAdoo said at the Combine too, you're not going to throw the guy into the trash bin and give up in year three. You know, he's a first-round pick. You obviously, you know, put resources into him being your first-round selection and the top 12 pick. You want to give him a chance. Now, would you have liked to see more improvement from a year one to year two? Absolutely. If he doesn't make more improvements this year, is he going to be in a little bit of trouble? Absolutely. But you're not going to throw him away. You're going to give him another shot. Now, the onus is on him to get better, to become a better player, and that will help the Giants win more football games. Can he do it? Is it the right thing to do? Those are fair questions. We don't know the answer to that. We'll know a lot better when we talk to you in October after four September games. And quite frankly, after we watch him in the spring and summer. Because I said this last year during, you know, training camp, and we talked about it on the air. I mean, Olivier Vernon went off in training camp. He can block him. So I want to see when they line up in training camp one-on-one with pads on, can Ereck Flowers pass block against Olivier Vernon? If he can, I'll feel a lot better about this year. If he can't, I'm going to be really nervous. We'll have to wait and see, though. You're not going to know until they get the pads on and do those one-on-one.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, for anybody looking for an answer during OTAs, you're not going to find it. I'm sorry. And I don't really care what takes place during OTAs because it's still hard to evaluate guys when they don't have the pads on. I mean, they're running around in shirts and shorts.
You can't have contact.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, for anybody who's going to read reports about what the reporters say and the observations, to me it's meaningless. Mm-hmm. Like you said, August, training camp. That's when the men start to separate themselves from the boys. And here's the other thing. The last caller, who I think brought up a good point, which is more of a big-picture perspective about tackles and how difficult it is to find them in the NFL, all of the names he listed Eric Fisher, he listed Luke Jokel, you know, guys who have been moved
Greg
around,
Robinson.
Greg Robinson, and teams have experimented to try to make them more effective.
Dude, even the guards, Chance Warmack and Jonathan Cooper.
And Warmack is now with the Eagles.
And Cooper's with Dallas.
So
there were top 15 picks, those guys.
A lot of high picks have moved around, but to bring it back to Flowers, year three is a very critical year. And you could say that about most positions in the NFL. It's not just offensive linemen.
Absolutely.
But, so that's why, you know, and I understand some fans, you know, patience is easy to say but hard to follow. But overall, year three is critical. So this, to me, is a year where I think it makes much more sense to put him under the magnifying glass when you have one year where he was banged up. Okay, then you had an off season where he was trying to recover. Now this was the first season where, okay, he was fully healthy, so you have something there. Now let's see what is built off of 2016. Is it a continuation, or is there a drastic turnaround? 17 is going to make or break it.
Yeah, and look, we'll find out. And as we got closer to free agency and we looked more at the draft and we started talking about this back in February, we didn't see a lot of great options out there where it's like, oh, here's an answer to, you know, move Ereck Flowers off. And based on the salaries these players got. I mean, Paul DiTino is sitting here talking about Riley Reiff for $6 to $8 million a year. He got a $12 million a year contract.
Everybody who is a veteran free agent, and that's part of it because of the fact that they're not confident in the draft picks this year.
Beecham, who got cut from Jacksonville, who were terrible on the offensive line last year, he got almost $10 million a year, and he's a bad – he's not a good football player. He's just not good.
And he's been banged up, too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Matt Khalil had a brutal year last year before he got injured.
He cashed in.
Look what he got.
Absolutely.
I mean
– what about Russell Okung?
And even though it's not ideal, and we're not trying to tell you it's ideal, because obviously you'd love to be able to roll out a Pro Bowl left tackle if you could. You'd love to. Everybody would, of course. But given the other stuff that was out here, the best chance, at least in the Giants front office's eyes, was to give Ereck Flowers a chance to improve and meet his potential. See if he can do it.
Well, I have a better question, though. If you want, if you're a Giants fan and you wanted one of those veteran offensive linemen, here's my question to you. Who are you willing to sacrifice? You sacrificing Keenan Robinson? Are you sacrificing JPP in a long-term deal? Are you sacrificing – I mean, you got to sacrifice something, though, and if you're going to bring those in.
And it's not Keenan Robinson. If you're going to sacrifice, if you want one of those big-time offensive linemen, here's the question, and I think it's a great one that you asked. Do you want to not have JPP, or do you not want to have Brandon Marshall? Those are your two options. You can't have JPP,
and
Marshall, and the big offensive lineman. No way.
You can't have those three.
Not happening.
Well, but I also look at it as I think you could even take it further. You could take Marshall, Rhett Ellison. I mean, I'm looking at the complementary pieces that were brought in, which would make up, in combination, what an offensive lineman would have cost on the free agent market. And then maybe you still would have been able to get the JPP deal done. I don't think that would have eliminated it, but you have to sacrifice it. For everybody campaigning, veteran offensive lineman, who are you taking off the roster currently?
But
you
I don't want
to answer it.
I don't want to hear somebody come in and say, oh, I'll Rhett Ellison and Keenan Robinson, and then we'll just sign the offensive
line. No, those two alone is not going to do it.
No,
there's going to be a third piece to that. Because remember, Marshall was a very good value deal, too. It's not as if they had to break open the bank for that. So Marshall gets included in that.
Correct.
Yes. Absolutely. That's why I said it's a combination of three or four guys that you're sacrificing.
If you're looking at the lower end.
Yes.
I mean, even JPP, I mean, you know, you can structure these contracts so that, you know, base numbers and years are low. None of those numbers are official. We can't get into them. But, you know, needless to say, Riley Reiff, Whitworth, Okung, Khalil, Beecham, I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody at offensive tackle. I think those are the big guys. Riley Reiff, you know, all those guys, they banked. They banked. And quite frankly, I know you guys are going to laugh. If you want to go by the Pro Football Focus ratings, because you don't have any other metric to judge offensive linemen, some of those guys rated worse than Ereck Flowers last year. Worse. Or just as bad. So, does that make a lot of sense? No, I'd rather go with a young guy and then hope he improves. Now, again, it's not ideal, but given what was on the market in free agency, the reality of the situation, and given what's available in the draft, this is just kind of what the best scenario happens to be at the time. And you might not like it, but I don't really think there's a better option out there, to be honest with you. 201-939-4513. Dave in Maryland, he's up next. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Dave. How are you, buddy?
All right, I'm going to take the high road and stay away from Ereck Flowers.
That's fine.
I think he's going to be great.
You can do whatever you want, Dave. Hey, Dave, here's the thing. I don't know if he's going to be great, but we're going to find out, and that's the thing. This is, like Lance said, it's year three. It's do or die. It's all going to happen in front of all of our eyes, and we're all going to see for ourselves what this kid has in the tank. And for the Giants' sake, everyone hopes that he does well.
Yes. All right. I want to move on to Hankins. I see he's holding out, and it's a bit concerning, but I'm wondering if the GM's other teams realize that when we were horrible, he didn't really flourish as much as the Giants would have liked. And now you put him with the likes of JPP, Snacks, and Olivia Vernon. I'm wondering if they realize that he's more of a role player and not worth spending a whole bunch of money in free agency.
Well, I think part of the evaluation, I brought this up on a previous show. I mean, that's certainly a valid point. I think you have to look at, does a player thrive because of the players he's next to in the scheme, or can he do those things as an individual no matter where you put him? But I also think it has to do with, you know, he's been banged up during the course of his career as well, Dave, and players and teams are wondering if we move this guy into our scheme, are we going to get similar production? Remember, Hankins had that second year where he had 7 sacks, and then all of a sudden it went down to 0. So if you sign a defensive tackle in this league, and this just goes to show you why defensive ends are held at a premium and they get the big bucks, you want a defensive tackle that's not just going to come in and stop the run. You want to maybe provide some pass rush. And Hankins, I think the jury's still out. I think he's shown that he can get to the quarterback, but I don't think we have enough of a sample size to show that it's happened consistently.
Yeah, and Dave, was he out of position last year? Is he better suited to playing the position that Snacks played last year, playing over the center, playing between the center and the guard, or is he a three technique between the guard and the tackle where he played last year? So I think that's another part of the equation here. When teams evaluate his tape, where do they think he fits best, and where do they have a need?
Not only that, I mean, we're building something great here. You got guys restructuring so we could build, you know, so we could have that cap space. And he's basically homegrown here. We drafted him. And, you know, lately we've been approaching these players in their free agency coming off their first contract. And he wants, I guess, we don't want to give him that one-year contract because he's either going to flourish and then we ain't going to be able to afford him, or he's not going to play up to par. So we want to get like a mid-range, decent quality contract out. Well, that's my thought process.
Well, I mean, I think it also depends on his mindset and what he wants. I mean, he may be content with taking a one-year deal and then reevaluating the market next
season. It's a proven deal.
Don Terry Poe took a one-year deal.
Alshon Jeffrey took a one-year deal.
I don't think that's crazy.
Because, Dave, you know, I'm sure the Giants would love to have him wrapped up long-term under a reasonable contract. Every team wants that for all their good players. So that wouldn't surprise me.
Not the Redskins.
But does Hank – no, well, the Redskins want it. They're just not able to execute it. So the question is, does Hankins, though, want to do that? Is he willing to, quote-unquote, settle for that, if you want to call it that, whatever? Or, like Glenn says, does he want to go, you know what, I'll go for 1 year, like Don Terry Poe did, at a decent number. If I play really well, maybe he comes back and has 5.5 sacks next year, and then maybe a team would be willing to give him $40, $50 million on the open market. Who knows? So it all depends on what Hankins is willing to do, not necessarily what the Giants want to do. It's the ball's in the player's court right now because there's not a lot of money left. Teams spent a lot of their money at this point. So I would be shocked if a big contract just pops out of nowhere for him from another team unless there's an injury somewhere or something like that.
Well, you hit it right on the nose. I was going to say he may just be waiting around to see if somebody gets hurt, but that's risky because then you start missing OTAs, you miss spring.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wants to do that.
I would think he's going to get signed for the start of the offseason program, wherever that is, in the middle of April. That would be my guess.
I would guess that, too. I mean, because if he waits till after the draft
so he's got two weeks,
you know, he's also taking a risk himself.
He's got 14 to 20 days. I think in the next 3 weeks, we should know what's going on.
Well, but this is what I'm wondering.
And thanks for the call, Dave. We appreciate it, man.
Dave, thanks so much for weighing in. Over the next 2 weeks, given the fact that the draft is not going to happen during that time period, how much is the market going to really change, John?
You wouldn't think. That's the thing.
There's a freak injury off the field, that's literally what you're banking on for the market to drastically change.
That's why these agents say if you get that contract early, you take it. Because a team will move on very quickly, give that money to somebody else, and then all of a sudden you're sitting there with your cup out on the street corner, everybody's walking past.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that's the thinking, it'd be very interesting to see how everything plays out. But right now, I've always said this, the longer Hankins is out there, I think that's good news for the Giants.
Absolutely.
The longer he's out there and the less options he has, I think that's still very good news for the Giants.
Yeah. I mean, if you would ask me 2 weeks ago what I thought the chances were of Hankins coming back here, I would have said probably not great, especially after JPP was under the franchise tag.
Yeah.
Once he signed the long-term deal, I still thought, well, you know what? I don't know. It might be tough. But you're right. As Hankins stays out there longer and longer, you wonder if he's going to be able to make something work here for another year or maybe long-term. Who knows? We'll see. And then he'll be here for a while, or he'll be here for one more year, and then we'll go through this again a year from now. But, yeah, I think there's a much, much better chance now than there was 2 weeks ago and especially a month ago.
And you know what? If it doesn't get settled by the time spring comes around, as you just alluded to, all that's going to do is give the Giants an opportunity to further develop who's behind him anyway, which is not necessarily a bad thing. In the event that he did come back, you at least get more reps with the starters and so forth and build up your depth chart.
You're not on numbers there at defensive tackle right now on the roster. I think three, actually. I think the only defensive tackles on the roster are Robert Thomas, Jay Bromley, and Snacks. I don't think there's any other defense. At least Jordan Renan tweeted that the other day. I'll trust the fact that he's right. But look, they'll have to figure that out. You need depth on the defensive line. You know, Steve Spagnuolo likes to rotate those guys. Scott is down in Virginia. He joins us next on Giants.com. Hi, Scotty.
Hey, guys. Hey, I can shed some light on this, I think. I called in last week asking about the salary cap over the weekend, and I know this is not may not be exactly accurate, but the Post reported they originally had $32 million in cap space. They're down to roughly $9.4 million. They said count on them saving $3 million for the draft. That leaves $6.4 million. So my question is, doesn't that – I mean, I like Hankins. I'd love to have him back. You want it was a great defense. You want to have the whole defense back. But if you got $6.4 million left – don't you save that money for June 1 cuts and and you get a lower-priced veteran defensive tackle and still hope to improve that offensive line?
Now, Scott, here's the thing. June 1st cuts don't exist anymore. You know, you can cut – the Giants, if they wanted to, could cut anybody on their roster today and designate him a June 1st cut. So teams don't actually wait till June 1st to make these cuts anymore. They make them now and just designate them a June 1st cut for salary cap purposes. So I wouldn't worry about saving money for some panacea at left tackle to be cut loose on June 1st because, honestly, 99% it's probably not going to happen. So I wouldn't worry about saving money for that per se.
And if somebody gets cut on June 1st, if a team actually waited and kept it behind closed doors, you have to wonder why are they getting rid of the guy at this time of the year? Unless they all of a sudden made a huge splash in the draft and this kid that they brought in is going to be a Hall of Famer immediately, right, which I think is very risky.
I understand what you're saying. The point you just made is my point. It's the draft. A team will often draft somebody at a position and say, okay, now we can let somebody else go. I don't know. It just seems to me like they're really down to it. And I don't know that Hankins puts us over the top to win a Super Bowl. Let's face it, we're all having this conversation based on the fact that we think we're a Super Bowl-caliber team. The problem with that offensive line, they got a lot of guys they can work with, but you cannot protect two offensive tackles on a passing down.
Yeah.
You can protect one or the other. And unfortunately, they're still in a position where you have to protect both offensive tackles. And I agreed with your first caller. I like Eric Flowers. I'm a Cane. I graduated from the U. I love Flowers. He's a great run blocker, but he's a year or two away from being a pass blocker, let's face it. So you can't have two offensive tackles where you have to protect them on a passing down. That's my concern. To me, that's the one thing stopping us from winning a Super Bowl.
Scott, I think it's a fair point. Yeah. I think it's a fair point.
Thanks, guys. Keep at it.
Appreciate it.
All right, Scott.
Hey, look,
right.
And it's hard. And look, the Giants have Eric Flowers at left tackle, who's only played in the league for 2 years. They got Bobby Hart at right tackle, who's only played in the league for 2 years. Now you got DJ Fluker that's been in the league for 4 years. Maybe he can compete with Bobby Hart on that right tackle. Who knows? You know, they brought John Jerry back to, you know, compete at right guard. You know, I would think that he would be the starter based on the fact he has started every game there the last couple of years. Who knows? We'll see how they use Fluker there and, you know, things of that nature. But or maybe they like Hart inside and they move somebody else at the tackle. Who knows how they handle the right side of that line. But look, you're right. In this league, Lance, it's you can't protect two tackles at the same time. So you would hope that one of those two starting offensive tackles, whoever they might be in, wherever they might be positioned, gets to the point where they don't need help. Because you're right, you can't chip and do things on both sides. And we've talked about this a million times. The premier pass rushers aren't just over the left tackle anymore. They're over both.
Moving around, yeah. That's why how many conversations do we have throughout the course of last season and callers calling up? And I'm not downgrading the callers, but, you know, move this guy to right tackle, move this guy to left tackle. And I'm saying to myself, the team's on film. They're going to then move their elite pass rushers to the opposite side so they find the guy who's the weak link on the offensive line.
When you played the Green Bay Packers, who do you think their best pass rusher was last year?
Nick Perry.
Where did he line up?
Well, he lined up wherever the hell they wanted him to line up.
But he was over the right tackle more than he was over the left tackle.
Yes,
and Clay
was.
Matthews was over the left tackle. When you play the Denver Broncos, who are you most worried about?
Von Miller.
Where does Von Miller usually line up?
Von Miller, same thing, pretty much.
Yeah, he lines up more over the right tackle.
Well, and that's why you have to take into consideration that the days of your elite pass rusher always lining up over the left tackle are gone because of the convolutedness of the schemes and everything and guys moving around and mixing and matching and defensive coordinators trying to catch offenses off guard. That's why every team needs to have multiple pass rushers, because if you have one, then you're going to become predictable to the opposing offenses.
Well, teams aren't stupid.
Yeah.
If let's say you're lining up, I'll take a team in the division. Let's say you're lining up against the Dallas Cowboys. You're looking at Tyron Smith over there at left tackle, perennial all-pro Pro Bowl player. Heck, look at the Redskins. Trent Williams, Jason Peters, Eagles, whatever. Take any of the three. And then all of a sudden you look over on the right side and you say, Doug Free's over there. Or this year, who the hell knows who's over there because Doug Free retired.
Yeah.
If you're on the Eagles, Lane Johnson suspended. Who do they got over there at right tackle? Why would you put your best player and have him going against Tyron Smith?
When you could win the battles more often than not on the unproven commodity.
When Tyron Smith can neutralize him. But if you put Brandon Graham over Doug Free, or whoever the hell they're going to replace Doug Free with, instead of Tyron Smith, and he can harass the hell out of Dak Prescott, why wouldn't you do that? Of course you would.
That's become the philosophy. And now, speaking of protecting offensive linemen, Rhett Ellison, I think part of the philosophy is that he can assist. More likely the right tackle and even the left tackle at times.
I mean, I think more probably in the run game than the pass game.
And I would agree
with
you.
In my opinion.
No, I think that's a fair sentiment. So, you know, he can't be in 75 different positions. But I think part of the rationale, once again, is that Ellison can be somewhat of an additional offensive lineman to strengthen the overall blocking of the unit. Not to necessarily baby feed and hold hands of somebody, but I'm talking about overall, the emphasis was to help out in blocking. And John Mara, by the way, that's why I'm emphasizing the Giants.com article. He was also asked about Ellison, and blocking was brought up numerous times in his commentary about him.
And frankly, if adding Brandon Marshall, maybe you can leave your running back or tight end in the block a little bit more because you have another big receiver to set up more mismatches at wide receiver. Maybe you can only send four guys into a route or five guys into a route instead of six. You know what I mean? Or send five instead of four or four instead of five and keep one guy in the block, pardon me, because you have the five offensive linemen, the quarterback, and five guys go out. So you keep an extra one in, you send four guys into the route instead of five, and you keep one in the block. You can do that more since you have Brandon Marshall out there, a wide receiver.
And you could use Marshall as a blocker, let's not forget what he's capable of doing in the running game, yeah.
Rick in Connecticut is our final call of the show. Hi, Rick, how are you?
Good, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, Rick. How are you, pal?
Great. Little rainy day here. So, actually, my question is, you guys were just talking about it, is skill position players and run blocking this year. So I just saw we were averaging 3.5 yards per carry last year.
Yeah, give or take.
What?
Give or take.
Yeah, something like that, which was, you know, bottom five in the league.
Yep.
And, you know, so this, you know, there's a lot of questions about this Rhett Ellison contract, right? Seems like a lot of money, whatever, you know. I'm not going to question that part of things. But, you know, you just nailed it. I mean, Brandon Marshall, his interview where he said he prides himself on his blocking, you know, I already love this guy. And when I heard him say that, you know, let's face it. I mean, Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham, you know, amazing. They're not big guys. You know, do you think that with this Rhett Ellison and this Brandon Marshall and maybe getting Paul Perkins, you know, a little bit more, you know, up to speed, you know, maybe we'll have some more fullback sets. You know, what do you think the skill position blocking is going to do for the run game this year?
Well, I think that the mindset of the Giants is to bring in guys that are not just going to wow you in the receiving game, but are going to help in those other areas that you alluded to. Now, Ellison, I mean, he hasn't averaged a lot of catches during the course of his career with the Minnesota Vikings. Is it possible the Giants try to get creative? It's possible, but, I mean, if you ask me, what is Ellison going to bring to the table? He's going to help out the blocking. I mean, that's what his goal is, as a fullback, as a tight end. Marshall, I don't think Marshall's addition was, we're just going to line him up and help block for the run game. I mean, you want to use him because of his ability to catch the football, but an added bonus, just like when Amani Toomer was here, you know, Toomer was a good blocker down the field. And those are always facets of players' games that nobody ever talks about. But you know what? You need the receivers to aid the run blocking, because when you get to the second level, why does Paul Perkins then break through for an additional 5 yards? It's because the wide receiver ahead of him and ahead of the offensive lineman got in front and paved the lane. So Marshall, to me, is an added bonus with his ability to block up front. I mean, as far as the other skill positions that were brought in, really it's offensive linemen, and that's just all going to be competition for starting jobs. So, I mean, Fluker and some of these other players that were brought in for competition, I mean, there's no guarantee the Giants are going to throw out six offensive linemen sets very often, but I think that it's overall going to help at least guys who are starting right now not take for granted that they're coming back to their respective spots next season. And there's nothing wrong with that. It pushes everybody on this team.
Yep, absolutely. And then one more quick one is, what's going on with Will Tye? You know, he's from Connecticut, you know, so I've been following his career a little bit. I always felt like, you know, why couldn't we get a little bit more of that seam passing going? You know, I understand maybe his blocking's not great, but it was definitely better than, say, Donnell. I mean, we don't know what we have in Adams. What are your thoughts on Will Tye this year?
I mean, you hope he continues to improve. I mean, he's still a young player. He's only been in the league for a couple years. Didn't play a ton in college after leaving Florida State. He doesn't have your classic, you know, 6'4", 6'5" tight end, long arm frame, which I think maybe limits his ability to get up the seam. He doesn't have great speed. He's not running away from guys. He doesn't run a 4.55 or whatever you want a tight end to run. So, look, I think Will Tye is what he is. He's a solid receiving tight end that needs to work on his blocking, and I think you hope he takes another step this year as he continues to improve and become a better football player.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, guys. You have a good one. Talk to you soon.
Got it, Rick. Thanks for the phone call.
Good call.
Yep, bye.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mix it up for a couple of different topics. And tomorrow, by the way, we'll do Ohio State with the prospects. We'll have former Ohio State and Arizona Cardinal running back Beanie Wells, who knows some radio out there in Ohio. He'll join us to talk about some of the prospects coming out of Ohio State at 12:30. The show, of course, will start at 12. He'll join us about halfway through and take us home. So make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com for that. And, of course, this is the last day. Am I correct, Dominic, to vote in the Big Blue Bracket Challenge? Go to Giants.com/bracket, 7 p.m. 6 p.m. is the cutoff. I took my glasses off, sorry. 6 p.m. is the cutoff deadline for votes for the Big Blue Bracket Challenge. North Carolina, from my understanding, has a lead at this point.
Over LSU, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
So, no, who's North Carolina playing? Ole Miss, right? So it's Eli.
Oh, is that thought?
Yeah, no. UNC knocked out LSU in the last round.
Oh, okay. That's
correct.
Why I'm one
they
round
did
behind.
Face each other. They were one round behind. So
gotcha.
It's just one day of finals voting. So it's the Eli Manning trade. And if you want to, you know, vote against that because he wasn't actually drafted, I understand your sentiment, but nothing
I
can do about
that.
Can
we have a quick commentary on that? I'm actually surprised. You opened Pandora's box. I'm very surprised that Ole Miss made the final. First of all, Eli Manning was the only one representing that school. And like you said, he wasn't originally drafted. He was acquired in a trade. I'm surprised that he knocked off Michigan, which to me had much more substance. That's just my two cents. So I'm a little bit disappointed. I would have thought North Carolina-Michigan would have been a more intriguing matchup.
I thought there were a couple other guys. I thought Michigan State might have beaten LSU, too, to be honest with you.
Well, but Carolina should have won out on that side of the bracket. MSU was on that side. I'm talking about on the Ole Miss side. Michigan, to me, was the best competition to knock off Eli Manning, essentially.
Concur.
So I'm very surprised that he is in the final.
You seem angry about it.
I'm not angry. I'm just, listen, you brought up the topic. We're here to talk about it, so we're going to at least give you some commentary on it. If Ole Miss knocks off North Carolina, all I'm telling you is Paul DeTino is going to have a rant that's going to last an entire hour.
Well, we'll know the results tonight. We'll talk about it on the show tomorrow.
Okay.
When you join us on Big Blue Kickoff Live at noon, it'll be me and Lance once again. And again, we'll break down the process from Ohio State. You might have a lot of your excitement in the background. Dan Salamone's going to be working the phones and doing the producing.
Mr. Buckeye.
Yeah, he's quite excited about it. So for Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmoe. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody. Adios.